The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone out there in Medical Alley. Thank you for joining us for another Medical Alley podcast. I'm really excited today by the guests we have on to have a conversation about a very hot topic that's out there, and the topic of SPACs in healthcare. I'm so pleased to be joined by Sari Kaganoff, the GM of Consulting at Rock Health. Sari, thank you for being here. How are you doing today?
My pleasure. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Maybe you could start. Could you give us a little bit of an intro on you and your work, and then tell the listeners a bit about Rock Health if they're not familiar with it?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm the general manager of consulting at Rock Health. And maybe I'll give a little bit of intro on Rock Health, and I can deep dive into the consulting piece of it. Rock Health, it has two main parts to our business. We're a digital health-focused venture capital firm investing in seed and Series A digital health startups. And on the other side, we work with enterprise companies on their digital health strategy. And that's where I sit in consulting, really working with either enterprise healthcare companies or newcomers to healthcare who are beginning to operate in this space, understanding the market landscape and developing strategies to compete effectively in digital health. Prior to Rock Health, I was at McKinsey & Company for 7 years, where I co-led their work on digital health and patient experience. So I've been in the space for a really long time, but very excited to be here at Rock Health building out the consulting practice.
And I have to imagine it's a great asset on the consulting side to have the investment arm and to see at the front line, see firsthand these new innovative companies, disruptive models, that are coming into healthcare.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly the fascinating piece of how we work at Rock Health, serving both sides of the market, because we really do get to see that innovation as it's emerging on the ground roots, and then also helping it scale on the enterprise side. And also we actually track the digital health market and have since 2010. So every deal in the US where there's more than 2 million invested, we've been tracking those companies and looking at what happens on the other end as well, like M&A and IPOs. So we've really are able to have a full picture view of what's been happening in digital health over the last 10, 11 years, and been able to see a lot of change, you know, especially now with the SPACs that are coming up.
Yeah, and right to the topic at hand, I have to imagine the last 10 years, incredible period of change. The last year, an incredible 10 years of change in a short period of time. And now we're seeing the SPAC environment come up. Could you talk about, first of all, for those who might not know, what is a SPAC? And then what's going on relative to digital health companies and the SPAC environment?
Yeah. So firstly, don't feel bad if you don't know what a SPAC is, because I didn't really know about 9 months ago. The kind of SPAC for dummies version of it is that a SPAC stands for a special purpose acquisition company. And essentially what it is a group of people forming what some people will call a blank check company. So it's a shell company with no operations, but they raise money through an IPO. So they become a publicly traded shell company, essentially. However, they have an express purpose of focusing on finding an acquisition of a private company to acquire. At the time when they acquire that company, that acquisition company, the target, becomes the publicly traded entity, becomes listed publicly on the exchange. So it's a really interesting vehicle for companies to go public as an alternative to an IPO. Now, what makes SPAC deal making really interesting in my mind is a couple of really nuanced points. Number one is what we call the time to acquire. So generally, SPACs will have 2 years to carry out an acquisition before they have to return the funds to investors. So the clock starts to tick. Once the company is formed, they have a certain defined period of time in which to carry out that acquisition. So it really puts a little bit of a time pressure on the whole scenario. The second is what we call a mandate to spend. And that is that the companies who have, they have to acquire a target with a fair market value of at least 80% of the funds that they've raised in the IPO. And that's called the trust value. And so they're actually kind of constrained in some level on the size of which the company is that they have to acquire. And then I think, you know, just by the way, as an aside, they can actually get more private money in to, so they can buy a company that's larger valuation because they can get extra placements of private capital, but they do, but they can't get too small. And then the last thing to note is just, although there are differences between an IPO and a SPAC, the SEC has started to release guidance scrutinizing SPACs a little bit more. And so there, we're in a bit of a turbulent time from that perspective where we're not quite sure where things will land. And we can talk about that a bit later on what's been happening, you know, in terms of those IPOs and those SPACs actually. But otherwise, that's the general gist of it. So blank check company that needs to acquire a target. And the other thing I might mention is that often when these companies do, you know, go public as the SPACs go public, they actually often state their intended acquisition type. So they will say, oh, I'm interested in healthcare, or I'm interested in digital health, or, you know, anything that they're interested in. So you can get some kind of a sense of what they're going to focus on. And then the last point I'll make is that often the founders of these companies are tend to be seasoned executives who are looking for a company to acquire and, you know, support in some way. So also, you know, not all SPACs are created equal, but you do need to look at who are the founders as well.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense. Has it had an impact on, I guess, the decision making then of digital health startups that are out there? It sounds like with SPACs, they have one more vehicle for a potential exit or for growth capital or whatever
exactly
that might be. What kind of impact has it had on digital health deal making or on the market?
Yeah. So firstly, it's been fascinating. Like I mentioned, I hadn't really heard of a SPAC prior to 9 months ago. And that's because there actually weren't any in digital health until the end of 2020. And so what you saw happening is actually pretty interestingly, in digital health, there were actually no public exits for a couple of years. So 2017 and 18, there were no IPOs at all. We called it the IPO drought. 2019, we saw six IPOs. In 2020, six IPOs and two SPACs. So the SPACs kind of emerged on the scene. But all of a sudden in 2021, it exploded. And you only had two IPOs in 2021, but between announced and completed SPACs, there were 14 digital health SPACs in 2021. So we went from zero to two to 14 in just a quarter and a bit. And so it really exploded on the scene. I mean, I think what's interesting about it is it definitely does give, like you say, another avenue for digital health companies to go public. And because of the IPO drought that we had for a while, as well as a lot of the companies beginning to mature, there was a bit of a pent-up demand, I think, for SPAC, you know, or in general for companies to go public, sort of this pent-up energy. And so some of them went the IPO route, but definitely a lot of them chose the SPAC route, which is a little bit easier on the company themselves. And we can get into that in a bit later on today. But that's kind of an interesting thing. And then, you know, I think what else is interesting on this note is that there's sort of, well, we can get into it again, but one thing to note is like you go public either way. And it's really important for companies to think about this, is that a SPAC, you know, though it looks like an acquisition, it does require you to become a publicly traded company. And so making sure that you think carefully about what you're doing when you do that, are you ready as a company, is important. So we definitely have seen a lot of momentum there, but I would say definitely companies should be careful to think about, you know, this isn't just an acquisition by another digital health company or strategic, you will actually be publicly traded at the end. But yeah, in synthesis, huge explosion, especially in 2021.
Right. And the public piece, you don't wake up tomorrow or wake up today and your SOX compliance or all of that stuff is done. there's a fair bit of work the organization's going to have to do if they were to go this route. What has it meant, do you think, on the other side for the established companies, for the strategics that might have been doing acquisitions or investments in this space? Has it changed their thinking or their decision-making on how they do deals or how fast they move? Or what has it been like for the consulting customers that you have?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that, because it is something that we have been warning them about, which is that there's really increased competition now for acquisition. And it may be helpful to take a step back, actually, and look at what I call the supply and demand in the SPAC space, which helps to set the stage for why this could really create some tension there. You know, one of the things that we were wondering when this was all happening was, you know what, we were curious to see all of these. So what's really interesting with the SPAC is, because the companies go public before they acquire their target, you actually know how many are out there publicly traded looking for a target, right? So you have a very relatively accurate sense of what I'll call demand, because they're, you know, looking for something. And that's different than what you normally have in the market, where you don't know how many strategics are actually looking, right? So what we tried to do is we said, hey, let's look at the supply versus demand for SPACs and their targets in digital health. And what we found was pretty interesting. So firstly, what we wanted to do was we wanted to compare, you know, what happens with SPAC targets versus IPO companies, and do they look the same or not? So what are we actually looking for when we call something supply? You know, what does that look like? So the first thing we looked at was the maturity. So we said, okay, all of the companies that went public through an IPO in 2020 and 2021 versus the companies that went public via SPAC, were they the same or different? And what we saw was that the companies that went public through the IPO on average had raised $227 million in private funding up to the point of IPO, but the ones that had gone public through a SPAC had raised $171 million. And so actually the companies going public through a SPAC were significantly less funded, than the IPO targets or companies. And then similarly with age, the IPO companies were 15 years old on average, and the SPAC targets were 10 years old on average. So definitely you see a skew to a younger, smaller companies. So we said, okay, now let's take that average looking target and see how many there are, right? We have this data set going back to, 2010. Let's look at how many companies actually exist that could be, could fit this criteria. And what we found was that if you look at the companies that had raised in the US over $170 million in total private funding in digital health, there were 56 of them. There are 56 of them. So that's what we'll call the supply, 56 companies. But if you look at the demand side of the equation, there are actually 69 SPACs that are public that have a tag, what they call, when they state what they're looking for in an acquisition, that has a tag that says healthcare as a target focus. However, of those, many of them actually have multiple tags. So they'll say healthcare and consumer and, technology or something like that. So we really wanted to narrow down which ones are really looking for healthcare specifically. And we found that 52 of those 69 companies had specifically labeled, either they only use terms like healthcare or life sciences or things like that. So you have 52 companies expressly looking for healthcare targets. And then you have 56 companies that are digital health companies of the approximate size. Now, I'm not going to exactly make a stand here, but I do think there's a hint of a supply-demand mismatch for sure in this case. There's just not as many companies as you would expect for that kind of searching. And so what I think this means is that the companies searching for SPAC targets will actually start to look for younger, less mature companies. And so I think that it is going to drive a lot of the competition because of the supply demand, back to your original question, because of the supply demand mismatch, it's going to drive for sure increased competition for strategics looking to acquire startups. The valuations will likely be higher. The options that it's a seller's market, let's put it that way. And so I think, if you're a strategic looking to acquire a digital health company, I'd say move quickly with conviction on what you're interested in, because there's definitely a lot of companies out there. I do want to just caveat that it's not perfectly apples to oranges, the supply demand I was mentioning, because some of those healthcare focused SPACs might acquire, you know, biotech companies or med tech companies. They may not all acquire digital health companies. That just exacerbates the equation a bit. On the flip side, there may be companies who didn't actually state an intention to buy a digital health company, and they may. So it's not a perfect amount, but you definitely see that it's a much tighter range than I would have expected when I did this analysis.
Yeah, the directionality of it seems very suggestive of what you're saying, in that the beneficiaries would be earlier stage digital health companies, and the strategics have a more competitive environment that they've now got to work in. And all in a thing that 9 months ago probably was not only not on your radar, probably wasn't on a lot of our radars.
Exactly.
I'm curious, the last few weeks, so we're recording this on May 19th, the SPACs that have been active, their trading performance hasn't been great. There's been stories about a number of them just not performing very well now that they're on the market. Some that have made acquisitions, some that have not. And this could be just pure speculation, and push it off as it is, if it is. But do you think there's any air coming out of the SPAC market? Might there be less pressure some months from now from it? Or do you think this is got more legs to it, and more an ongoing trend?
Yeah, so I would say yes and no. So firstly, I do think that there is definitely going to be a less proliferation of the SPACs, because the SEC has released some of these guidances around scrutinizing SPACs more comparably to IPOs, and also adjusting the accountants of warrants. And I'm not going to get into the specifics there, but basically what seemed like maybe not a piece of cake, but definitely simpler before, probably in the near future will not be quite as much of a slam dunk. So some of the benefit of a SPAC versus an IPO is going to go away. So I think that will reduce somewhat, or at least course correct, the number that are going public. That said, as we just talked about, there's a number of companies out there already looking for acquisition targets. So that bolus isn't going to go away. So that's definitely going to happen. And I do think that there still was, I was talking actually to an investment banker, and he was saying that, not just in healthcare, but just broadly SPACs, there had been about 50 a week in the beginning of this year. And then once the SEC released the guidance, it was down to like 5 a week, right? So definitely, shrunk down to some degree. But that said, the fact that the ones that are already out there on the market, is still going to be an impact on the space. But I do think, it might course correct to some degree, but I still think this will be a vehicle that people will make use of. It's actually been around for 20 some years already. But I do think, now that it's been proven as an option, it will still be around in some form, probably not quite as wild as the last couple of months.
And maybe building off that, but a slight tangent, you had mentioned in that analysis you had done that the average company that had gone IPO was 15 years old, SPAC company 10 years old, which I know in healthcare, right, is relatively young companies compared to the broader tech world that doesn't have the regulatory and compliance issues that healthcare has to work through. But then you said the SPAC investments are starting to create opportunities, or could create investments in earlier stage companies from the public entities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that has any downstream benefit on the private investors? Will that move all the investment earlier? Does it create more opportunity for those earlier investors? The amount of capital needed to make an impact in healthcare can be so significant. Does this add another source of maybe not early stage capital, but earlier stage capital?
I think it definitely does, because, as you point out, once you're publicly traded, you can get more money from the markets. And I think it's actually great for the ecosystem in some ways, because for the cycle of venture capital to work, there needs to be exit opportunities, right? Venture capitalists want to exit and be able to reinvest or just get the returns on their investment. So the fact that there is another option to exit is a great thing. And I think it's also great for the individual investors who may not be have access to venture capital, but can invest in the public markets. By the way, as an aside, I think there's a great opportunity here for an ETF focused on digital health, if anyone wants to start one. So I think that that's a good thing. On the other hand, I do see risk in the sense that if there are a lot of companies going public that are actually not really ready for prime time to be a publicly traded company, that can create, you know, a couple of bad apples that really shed negative, you know, impact on the broader market. So I'm a little concerned that as, you know, as these kind of publicly traded SPACs that need to find a target are scrambling against their timeline, all fighting against the, you know, the companies that there's just not that many of them. A lot of them are going to start dipping into the companies that might not have originally been really the right target, but they don't quite have a choice.
Maybe the positive side, it sounds like, is if you're an entrepreneur, it's a great environment to be working on healthcare. Big problem needs to be fixed. And additional capital, additional competition could be a tailwind then for good entrepreneurs to have not an easy path, because healthcare is never easy, but an easier path to do something meaningfully and or meaningful and impactful.
Yeah. And I would say, especially if you got into the game, you know, 7 years ago, let's say, it's a really good environment for you to potentially exit. But even if not, you know, there will be some venture capitalists that are, you know, have exited now, have the money to reinvest, or just kind of seeing the exit opportunities will make things more, you know, interesting for other company, you know, other venture capitalists to move in. So yeah, I think, and by the way, more broadly, there's in general, there's a lot of venture capital money available now for healthcare startups and digital health in particular. So it's a pretty good environment to be in if you have a good idea.
Indeed. Yeah, it's been kind of a renaissance the last 10 years or so. And I'd be curious, and this might be a good place to wrap it up, to ask, given the investment that's happened, the companies that have exited, new entrants coming in, whether it's an Amazon, a Walmart, or a Best Buy, what do you see as some of the biggest impacts that the digital health development or revolution has had on healthcare? Are we starting to feel the benefit of it? Do you see it on the horizon? What do you see with the companies you're working with where the impact has been there?
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely think it's had a big impact on the digital health industry. I think to the point, or on the healthcare industry rather, I think to the point of it's intertwined now, right? I don't think, you know, maybe 5 years ago, people were asking about what's this cutting edge thing, digital health. I think now it's really embedded in every component of healthcare, you know, whether it be along the pharma life cycle and value chain, whether it be across the patient journey and care delivery. I mean, it's really embedded across. So I think folks recognize that this isn't going away. This is just how we do things. We're probably like 20 years later to the game than most other industries, or 10 years at least. But I think it's finally had its moment. And of course, you know, with COVID, digital health really enabled the healthcare system to weather that storm, particularly with patients who would not have been able to be cared for otherwise. So I'd say, you know, we've arrived in the sense that this is how healthcare is. There's still a lot of opportunity to optimize and create new things that are going to work better and have patients give patients a better experience and more integrated. And, you know, also a lot of opportunities in the scientific realm with digital biomarkers and sensors. And, you know, there's still a lot of ways to go, but I think we're at a point where everybody would say that digital health really is just part of healthcare. It's really not niche anymore.
That's fantastic. And I think that's a great place to wrap it up. Digital health has arrived, but there's still a lot of work to do. Sari, thank you so much for joining us today. Fascinating discussion. I learned a bunch of new things. Really appreciate you spending the time with the Medical Alley community.
Sure, my pleasure. And if anybody wants to talk SPACs or digital health or anything exciting, feel free to reach out. We're always open for conversation.
Fantastic. Well, folks, that is the Medical Alley podcast for today. Make sure to check out medicalalleypodcast.com to see this episode and all the many others. And if you have ideas for people we should have on or things we can do, you know where to find Medical Alley. Reach out anytime. Have a great day.